I Suck at Dating with Dean, Vanessa, and Jared, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on yet another episode of Help, I Suck at Dating. My name is Dean Unglert, and I am joined in studio by the dashing Jared Habon.
Dashing, huh? Thank you for that intro.
It's the first adjective that came to my mind. Next week, I'll give you something else.
Probably like asshole or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Perhaps.
I appreciate that.
Great episode for you guys today. We have one of my personal favorites. Have you ever met this person?
Danielle?
Well, I was going to tease it a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I just really spoiled that one, didn't I? Sorry, guys.
Have you ever met this person that we're going to have on our podcast?
I actually do not think I have, which is quite funny. She's been on Bachelor.
Figure. Well,
she was on one of our Dear Friends season.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So, yeah, so we have a guest coming on. She was on my season of Bachelor in Paradise, season four, our, as Jared said, our good friend Nick Viall's season. She's a nurse in Nashville, one of my favorite people from this show, as Tanya walks into the studio. Hey, Tanya. One of my favorite people from this show, Danielle Maltby, who she's a nurse practitioner in Nashville. So we're going to have an STD-centric episode today, talking about the stigmas attached to them, what you should know if you have one, what you should know if you're dating, what you should know if you're thinking about being sexually active, all of the above.
Yeah, I think it's a health and awareness podcast.
It's okay. Tanya, do you want to tune in?
Yeah, Tanya, you want to say hi? Tanya just walked in. She's getting her pink thermos, her computer, her backpack.
Is this on?
Yeah,
it's on. It's on. We hear
I'm
you.
So sorry. Why? I'm so sorry.
No, do you want to join us for the STD,
do you have any STD
conversation?
I used to have HPV.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I think you've been pretty open about that on
I
your
I have because
guys.
I think it makes people feel like I got it after I had sex with my first partner.
Right.
So it was very traumatic for me, and I really had like a hard time dealing with it. And so that's why I'm open about it now, because I think it helps a lot of people. At the time, like, I didn't know anybody that had it. So I literally thought I was like going to die.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree. I think it brings a lot of comfort to people to know that somebody in the spotlight also had it, so they're not alone.
Yeah, it was scary. But like, honestly, all I had to do was just like, that's kind of why I live my life the way that I do now. Like, just very clean. Like, I just had to eat really well, exercise. Like, they tell you not to, like, smoke. And literally 6 months, it was, like, gone. Never been back. Knock on wood.
Well, yeah, knock on wood.
Thanks for sharing that with us. For the listeners out there that want to get to know Tanya a little bit better, check out Help Scrubbing In with Becca Tilly and Tanya Rad.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to interrupt.
No, okay. It's fantastic.
We can tell you're in a rush. So thank you for even just jumping
Tanya,
on the mic
you're
and saying
allowed
hi to
our
listeners.
Interrupt anytime.
I love you guys. I'm not in a rush. I just don't want to be in your way. So I'm going to be right back there listening because I love listening to this podcast.
Amazing. Thanks, Tom.
An ear away.
We love you as always. Let's get to answering some questions. Danielle, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh my gosh. It is so, so great to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm good. I've missed your voice too.
It just puts a smile on my face, ear to ear right now. Thank you so much for calling in and talking about STDs with us. So I just gave a brief introduction, obviously, of your time on The Bachelor in Paradise, and you are a working nurse in Nashville. And so who better than to share the wealth of knowledge that you have with our listeners? Because as we were talking about, obviously, STDs, no one wants them, right? But a lot of people will get them, and then they get fearful of having them and then getting them again. And there's a lot of misinformation out there about them, right? So,
yeah.
But Danielle, before we jump into it, just go ahead and like say hi to everyone, introduce yourself, all that.
Hi, guys. I'm Danielle.
That's a great intro.
You got more than that. Come on. What qualifies you to help us answer the questions on the podcast?
Okay. So I am a nurse. I've been a nurse for about 12 years. I work primarily in the NICU, and I'm also starting my own podcast for women in medicine. So it's going to be like a total health-related thing. It's going to be awesome. I'm very excited.
That is very awesome. Congratulations. I haven't actually congratulated you personally about that, but I'm super excited for
it. Have it.
I'm definitely going to listen. I'm really, really excited for it. Let's plug that as many times as we possibly can on this episode. When is that dropping? When is that going to come out?
It's going to come out June 3rd.
Okay.
And it's called The WOMED for Women in Medicine.
WOMED. And you are co-hosting it with a friend of yours, another nurse?
Yes. Her name's also Danielle. And I met her in Peru. We did a medical trip together down there and worked in some orphanages, and it was a really beautiful experience, and she's an awesome human, and I'm just so grateful she's going to do it with me.
That's amazing.
This is freaking smart.
This is kind of off topic to the podcast episode today, but when I was in Peru, I was told of this bug, and you probably heard about it too when you were down there working with the people down there. This bug that burrows into your skin, and you can see it burrow and live inside your skin, but you can't excavate it from your body until it feeds off of you enough to be big enough to like squeeze it out. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Aren't those just like bot flies?
I don't know, maybe, but it's kind of severe. I remember when I was doing the Inca Trail, I met up with a kid who had two of them burrow into his skin, and he was just telling me like they would like all gather around and have like this ceremonial thing where they would squeeze it, and then the bug would come out, and they would catch it in like this this lid, and they would like watch it. I don't know, is this great? But I get, maybe it is that fly thing. I don't know.
Just a bot fly.
It must be, and I'm just being maybe over.
I'm not up on all of my epidemiology for.
You should be. Okay, yeah. So we're gonna ask you some STD related questions, and you're gonna help us answer. Okay. Is that okay?
And they've changed it from STDs to STIs because, which is sexually transmitted infections, because it's a little less scary, I think, and like there are some that are treatable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like just the common term. They're changing it to STI.
So it's from disease to infection, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that was just the classification of the thing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Just the classification of it. It makes it a little less intimidating, I think. Like,
yeah.
Infections can usually be treated. Diseases are more of like a longer disease process.
I'm actually really grateful you clarified that, because last week Vanessa used the acronym STI, and that was my first mm-hmm. time really ever hearing it regards to one of her, not one of hers, but a story that she had heard. It just makes me think of Subaru, WRX STI. I wanted one of those so bad when I was in high school. Sorry, off topic. Do you want to read one of Vanessa's questions? Because so Vanessa obviously isn't on the podcast with us today, which is a shame because I know you and her are really good friends. But
yes, I love her very much.
Yes, she's a wonderful, wonderful person. But Jared, so you wrote some questions down. So Jared, do you want to read one of them?
Yeah. Hi, Danielle. How are
Jared,
you?
Hi. I've never even like met you. What's up?
I know. I've never met you either. How's Nashville? I was just there. It's a beautiful city.
Oh my God. It's so freaking hot right now, but it's gorgeous. I love it down here. The South is great.
It's freezing in LA. It's like 51 degrees, which is freezing in
Los
Angeles.
Oh my God. It's like 90.
I'm jealous. Danielle, you're also a neonatal. Is that how you pronounce it? A neonatal nurse. That works with infants, right?
Yes. So I take care of babies that are born prematurely or that are born term but have any sort of like respiratory, cardiac, like chromosome anomalies. I take care of all of them.
Wow. Well, that's incredible. Keep doing the incredible work that you're doing. But Vanessa, I did have some questions, as we all do, about STIs. As a woman, Danielle, Vanessa wanted to know, when should a woman start seeing a gynecologist and having a PAP test done? Can you also inform all our listeners what a PAP test is?
So you should be having, you should start seeing a gynecologist. They usually say when you become sexually active, but I think, I mean, that age is becoming so much younger. I think it would be good at least, like, by the time you hit 16 to go in and start having these tests. And during, like, a pap smear, they check your cervix for any sort of signs of infection or cancer, and they do a lot of STI testing in that process. So it's just kind of looking at all the lady anatomy and making sure it's okay and free of, like, diseases, any sort of trauma,
So your advice is as soon as you start to even consider being sexually active?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's something I can get behind. Is there a male equivalent for a gynecologist?
Actually, I'm not sure if there's a male equivalent to it, but men should also start, I mean, as soon as they become sexually active or think about becoming sexually active, really need to start educating themselves on not only how to keep themselves safe, but their partner safe.
Agreed.
As well. So
I will say that the female reproductive organs seem to be a little bit more complicated than the man's.
They are, yes. But I think guys, you can usually just go in to your normal doctor and like during like your yearly physical or something like that, ask to have specific testing done. Places like Planned Parenthood are really great. If you even think you have any symptoms, because a lot of STIs don't really present with a lot of symptoms or things that can kind of be overlooked. So, places like Planned Parenthood or like your normal clinic and stuff like that offer really affordable testing for all STIs, treatment and counseling on them as well.
Well, depending on what state you're in, I guess, is really what that boils down to.
Well, I think the equivalent for a guy of a gynecologist is just your typical doctor's appointment, but they do the old cup and cough, you know? Yeah. They
haven't gotten one of those in a while.
They cup and they make you cough, and apparently it tells them something.
So Danielle, Vanessa also asked a question regarding HPV. She wants to know if you can explain what it is and how we can prevent it, and if someone got their Gardasil shot 10 years ago, show they got, what is this?
The Gardasil is their HPV. That's the HPV shot. But it's the
Gardasil shot has changed in the past 10 years, is what she's saying.
Gardasil what Vanessa means by Gardasil, that's like a Canadian version. I looked it up and
So I got the Gardasil shot when I was like 20 or something too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Gardasil is the shot that helped prevent HPV, which can cause cervical cancer, mm-hmm. but it can also, it's not just for women. Like, I believe some testing has changed. I do believe men can now get the HPV vaccine as well, because HPV is human papillomavirus is what's responsible for genital warts.
Mm.
And while men can't get cervical cancer, they can also get things like anal cancer. And so by men getting the Gardasil vaccine, the HPV vaccine, they're also helping to prevent that transfer to their partner, whether it be another man or another woman.
So both men and women can get the vaccine?
Yes.
Interesting. I literally had no idea.
There might be like age limits on it though, because when I got the Gardasil vaccine, it was like only women between 16 and 26 that had been tested on.
How did you learn about this? Because I literally I've never heard of a man getting a Gardasil shot before, right? So why was I never educated about this?
It's a new thing.
It is.
So like the men getting it, I think, has only happened within like the last maybe like 2-3 years. Quote me on that, but it's a newer thing. It was first tested out in women as a way of preventing cervical cancer.
So do you think that there's ever a point where it's too late to get that? Like for me, being single and potentially sexually active, is it something that I should go out and ask my physician to do for me?
I would definitely ask, because I'm not as up to date on what age ranges the vaccine has been tested in and approved mm-hmm. in for men. So I think that's something that like everyone should ask about.
Next time I go in for a physical, I'll ask my doctor about that. I honestly never even thought to ask. So that's something that's I'm learning as we go on this podcast. Okay, Vanessa also wants to ask about birth control, and I'm familiar with different types of birth control. You can have the IUD, right? And then there's the pill, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. Vanessa specifically wants to know more about birth control, like seasonal, where you get your period 4 times a year instead of once a month, and how that might affect your body physically, and if it's a good thing, bad thing, and just kind of what your take is on it.
Yeah, so honestly, like birth control is different for every woman. What one product might work really well for one woman doesn't work that well in another. It's kind of a whole trial and error process. So there's the birth control pill. There's an IUD you can get. There's a thing called the Depo shot. There's a NuvaRing. There's an implant, a hormonal implant that can go in your arm. And what Vanessa's talking about is essentially just taking the same dose of estrogen pill for 3 or 4 months consecutively, and then breaking for a week, having a period, and then starting back up on it. There's been a lot that it works for a lot of women, and for some it doesn't. Like me personally, like my body just rejects it. It doesn't. It'll fight through it. But it hasn't been shown, like, you don't necessarily have to have your period every month to maintain, like, a healthy female cycle. So
okay.
It just depends on if your body is going to accept the hormones or right. if your uterus is like, no, like, I'm going to just kind of keep doing my own thing.
Right.
But you're still protected from...
It's funny how similar we all are, but at the end of the day, like such minor differences, especially when it comes to your hormones, can make with you.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so I guess your advice would then be just to make sure that you're taking the one that's appropriate for you.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
So on that note, go ahead.
And if you're taking something like the pill, like in order for it to be like the 99.9% effective, yeah. It has to be taken consistently at the same time of day.
What about like if you miss a day or two, can you double and triple up on that third or second or fourth day?
I mean, like if you miss a day, like you can double up, but like don't sit there and be like, oh, I haven't taken it for 3 days. I'm going to like
take four of them real quick.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. That could be bad. Well, so on that note, similar topic in regards to plan B or like the morning after pill that can pretty drastically alter your hormones in a much shorter amount of time, right? Is there?
Yes.
And that's kind of like a last ditch resort. Obviously, that's why they call it Plan B. You don't recommend it, but in a pinch, it comes in handy. Is there ever a point where you can like have taken it too many times? What's kind of your expert opinion on the Plan B situation?
So Plan B really is for emergencies only, as it suggests.
Yeah.
There are a lot of women who will just, you know, that's their birth control. They'll just go and they'll take it every time that they have sex, and that's not good for your body.
Right.
I mean, like at that point, like just go take care of yourself, invest in a form of birth control that works best for you. Like, don't, like, I wouldn't try and use like Plan B like every month as your
Right. But I guess the question is like, let's say you're consistently sexually active, right? So you're on birth control, but I know that a lot of girls, like, let's say you're not consistently having sex with new people or even with a significant other. And so you kind of get off the pill, and then every once in a while, like you might go out and do something, right? And then you would have to take it in that instance. But let's say like that happens, you know, once a year for 5 years. Is it okay to take the morning after pill those five separate times? And like, does that affect your body long term, or is it just like for those?
I mean, if you're taking it once a year, every 5 years, like, no, that's not going to do anything to you. Yeah.
But just don't use it as like your common everyday birth control. That does not, it sounds expensive too. It's like $50.
Well, it is. It's like $50 even for the generic.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who would ever want to do that, but. Okay, we have a couple other questions that our listeners emailed into us that you could definitely help talk about.
But first, we're going to take a quick break.
So actually, weirdly enough, in our last like two or three episodes, we've had a lot of herpes talk.
Okay.
And it's always a touchy subject because herpes is one of those that... it's less treatable than the others, right?
Yeah. So once you have herpes, you have it. It is not curable. And it's also something that can be spread from, like, it can really affect your sexual reproduction.
How would it affect your reproduction system?
Reproductive? Yeah. Like, it's one of those things that, like, moms can transfer to their baby.
Well, I know that there's the most common form is oral herpes, right, where it's transferred through like mothers kissing their children. And then so children contract it at like a young age and then go through their life thinking they've never had it when in reality they do. Is that right?
No, like you aren't going to get that just from like kissing people. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, I take that back. HSV-1, you can get that's like oral herpes, like your cold sores and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you can also have the genital version of HSV-1 too, from like oral sex.
Do those vary in severity from one to the next?
You'd have to. I'm not as up to date on that. Like you'd probably have to ask like one of the docs on that.
Well, So this is a specific example. Then this person has a question for you. It's less medical. Well, it's medical, but it's also kind of, I guess, in a way, philosophical. Where she says, about 8 years ago, I contracted herpes from my long-term boyfriend. He was diagnosed the day before I was. I felt like my whole life was over at 25. 8 years later, I've only dated one person. I've made myself accept that I'm okay being alone. She wants to know, how would you recommend bringing up the topic, and how long into dating would you recommend it be brought up? And that's something that we've talked about on the podcast as well. Like, how many dates do you go on before you bring something like this up? And what words of advice would you have for someone that might be dealing with that?
Honestly, I mean, like, I would want to know right off the bat before anything got sexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think I wouldn't want anyone to feel like they're, like, resigned to being alone mm-hmm. because of that. There are a lot of counseling services for people that have been diagnosed with herpes yeah. and how to, like, kind of navigate the dating world, how to have those conversations. So my advice would be to try and find, like, a support group and try and find some guidance that way, because I can't really speak to that, you know, like yeah. I would want to know right off the bat, but that would, I mean, I can empathize with how isolating that would feel.
Oh yeah. And that's kind of the thing too, is it's hard to put yourself in those shoes, because obviously it's something that if you haven't had to deal with it, yeah. then how do you,
yeah.
We have another one from Anonymous. She says, is oral sex sanitary? I don't like participating unless I'm literally freshly showered, but in talking with others, they don't think it's a big deal for them. So what do the experts say about oral sex?
I mean, I think you should probably always try and maintain cleanliness in your genitals. I mean, that's just like a pleasure that no one wants to go down on you if you're like filthy. Like, keep yourself clean. But there are things like dental dams or like even plastic wrap in a pinch, like if you want to engage in any sort of like oral sex. So
do you think oral sex is more intimate than genital sex? Is that the right phrase?
Ooh, it depends sex. On the person.
I think it is.
You think it's more intimate?
Anything you put your mouth on is more intimate.
Because I do know a lot of people that will not go down on someone unless they know them a lot more. But they'll obviously like engage in regular sex much more yeah. liberally than they would by going down on them. Which I always thought kind of interesting. And I mean, I think I kind of practice the same thing without really being as conscious to it.
Yeah.
What do you think, Danielle? I'm curious.
I don't know. I love it all. So.
You don't discriminate.
No, I don't discriminate. I do. It feels good. But I guess on a basis of like what's more intimate, I think I find both to be very extremely intimate. So
I agree. But think about it this way. Let's paint a picture. You go on a date. Okay. It's going really well. You've had a couple drinks. You guys are getting along well. He's making you laugh. You're making him smile. Eventually you get back to one of your apartments and, you know, clothes start to come off. And this is, again, yeah. you don't know this person very well. In my opinion, I think you're much more quickly to have sex with that person than to go down on them. You know what I mean? In my experience as well.
Yeah.
I think in practice, that's just kind of how I've always seen it.
Well, I also think that sex is mutually pleasurable. Oral sex is more pleasurable for one party, while it might be a little bit more of a... Not a chore. I don't want to put chore on there. But obviously it's an act for one person.
And then we're not in high school anymore, so we're not 69ing, right? Like, when's the last time you 69 with someone? I'm
you
curious.
69 I mean... Hold on, you 69 someone in high school?
I had a girlfriend, yeah.
You had a far different high school 69. Experience than I did.
I was not comfortable enough in high school to 69.
You what? You tried to 69?
No, like in high school, no, I was too scared. I was not as like yeah.
Isn't that more of an adult move?
I think that just as a curious 17-year-old, you're like, what can we do now? Let's 69.
How much sex did you have in high school? What can we do now? Like, it's bored. You're already bored of sex by junior year?
You're exploring things. You're like curious and you're doing things. I was just very sexually active 17-year-old with my girlfriend. But we were like, oh, like that was cool. What can we do that's even cooler? And I will say, I will say that since being 17 years old, I've 69'd exactly zero times. So I'm just saying, you're
really?
Right. Jared's point, it's very it's one-sided oral sex, right? Like one person is getting pleasure unless the other person gets pleasure from giving pleasure, which isn't uncommon.
No, I think a lot of people do.
Yeah. So Danielle, when's the last time you 69'd?
I mean, I'm not going to tell.
By the way, I'm using that for the swipe up this week on the podcast. Swipe up to find out when last time Danielle 69'd someone. But also for that particular emailer anonymous about oral sex, you can still contract an STI from oral sex, correct?
Yes, you absolutely can.
Because I think a lot of people have a misconception about
but
that.
But is it less or all? Can you get any STD from oral or is it just a select few?
I mean, it's pretty much still any sort of sexual contact you can get. You can get anything.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess because it's the mucous membranes, right? That.
Yeah.
That's a word I learned in high school. Pretty proud for remembering that.
Yeah, mucous membrane.
Yeah. And so, okay, let's compare mucous membranes on the inside of your mouth to the inside of your genitals for a woman, right? Like, are they, obviously their molecular makeup is different, but the way that they can absorb these types of STIs is the same.
Well, there's so much blood flow. Okay. So it's so highly vascularized.
That's why it's so sensitive, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I have a lot of questions that I don't even know how to ask because I don't know how to like verbalize them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So that makes sense. So you can get just about any STD through oral that you can through genital contact as well. Good to know.
Yep.
I didn't know that. I honestly had no idea. So I'm learning a bunch.
We have a lot more emails, but this one's from Renee, and it says, why do some people, guys and girls, get offended when you ask them to take an STD, in this case STI, screening before becoming intimate? Danielle, what are your thoughts about that?
I think everyone freaking should. I feel like so much of the responsibility is put on women to prevent pregnancy, to prevent STIs, and it's like, you're basically, it's your own personal health that's at risk. And if you are not man enough to respect yourself or the fact that you might get someone else sick, you should not be having sex. I wouldn't be offended at that. I would be like, okay, yeah, I like respect my sexual health. I respect your sexual health. Like just, it should be part of every time you go to the doctor, be like, yeah, I want to have a screening, like make sure I'm good to go.
Yeah, I think Renee probably has encountered people who have big egos and question why anybody would think that they have an STI as if it's, a negative thing. And then secondly,
They're so common.
Well, that's what
and
I was going to say.
Some people have them and don't know that they have them.
Yeah, I'm curious if she's also encountered people who might think they have one and are just in denial, because I feel like a lot of people who might think they have some sort of STI just won't get checked because they're too scared of what the results might show.
Yeah. But in that case, it's like you're at risk of making someone else sick, even if you aren't sure if you're sick.
Oh, totally. Whoever does that is a horrible person.
Yeah.
You should find out for the sake of not just yourself, which you should find out for yourself for your own health purposes, but also for other people that you might become intimate with because there's a possibility of you transferring it.
Let's talk about UTIs for a second.
Okay.
Because UTIs are much more common, right?
Very common,
So what exactly is a UTI?
So a UTI is a urinary tract infection. So any sort of, and they're very common. They're more common for women because our urethral tract is so much smaller. It's shorter than men. Mm-hmm. So men, you have like the entire length of your penis. Women have, it's maybe just like, maybe like an inch. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like it's only about an inch.
Oh, okay.
Jared's a toddler, apparently. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I have the sense of humor of a five-year-old. It's so pathetic.
No, it's fine. I do too. So it's kind of, it's hard to have like a sexual conversation right now. So UTIs are caused by any sort of bacteria that, like your normal skin bacteria. Everyone has bacteria on their skin that just kind of live there. But when you're having sex, like it's someone else's natural body bacteria that get like pushed up and like smudged around, you know, with yours.
Yeah.
So for women, it's very common. It's again, it's a shorter pathway into their bladder, urethra, and it's just a bacterial infection. So like UTIs are treated with antibiotics. And if you're into like more natural treatments, there's a, you can do like oregano and cinnamon.
And like cranberry so, juice is a big one too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But like straight up cranberry juice.
And so obviously, well, I guess it's not obvious, but I've never experienced UTI. I would assume you've never experienced a UTI either, Jared.
I have not.
Oh, so they're awful.
What is the sensation? Is it just, is it like a burning?
It like, it's burning when you urinate and you can, it can get as bad as like, you just almost feel like you have the flu sometimes.
Oh, like so like your body is actually reacting.
So like you have body aches, you have a fever. And it just, it hurts so much. It might feel like you can't like fully empty your bladder. Like you go in the bathroom and then you're like, I feel like I still have to pee, but like nothing, like I can't make anything come out.
Yeah.
And it can be very, very painful.
So I would imagine a lot of people misdiagnose themselves for having an STD, but in reality it's like a UTI.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what would your advice be for that? I mean, obviously it's always, the advice could always be to seek out a medical professional and have them diagnose you, but
yeah, it's so easy. And like, honestly, like the safest thing, like if you're not feeling well, if you are having symptoms that you might even have like the tiniest little inclination that it could be something more serious than a UTI, like just go to the doctor. There's so many, I mean, you have your you have clinics at Walgreens, you have Planned Parenthood, you have walk-in clinics everywhere. Like,
what's the lifespan of a UTI typically?
Well, I mean, I've had them before where I like didn't go in. I tried to like just do the whole cranberry juice thing and I got like really sick. Like it was, so if left untreated, they can go up into your bladder. And if they are left in your bladder too long, then they can even travel up into your kidneys and cause an infection there.
Jesus.
Because it's a straight line from your urethra to your bladder to like your kidneys. So it's, you're always like in your best interest to go to a doctor. It's super easy. You pee in a cup. You pee in a cup basically for UTIs, for any STIs, and they'll run the test and they'll see what's going on, and then they can treat you there.
Gotcha.
I know women that pee after having sex to try to prevent
really
a UTI. Is a UTI? Excuse me. Is that is that true or is that a myth?
No, that's true. It might not like fully prevent it, but it's a really good practice because by urinating after sex, you are flushing your urethra out. So like you're helping to flush any of that bacteria that might have come in. You're just flushing it out.
So would you encourage women after sex to do that?
Yeah, after intercourse, it's always a good idea to go to the bathroom.
Would you ever encourage a guy? Like let's say I had sex, right? And obviously, who knows? It's probably never going to happen again, but you never know. Let's say that I have sex with someone.
Well, you were very active at 17.
I had a girlfriend. Come on.
He was already bored looking for new things. Let's try 69.
We were exploring each other's bodies as horny teenagers do.
It's very healthy as long as you're doing it safely.
We were. But so, okay, let's say I find a new partner and after sex, she doesn't seem to be going to the bathroom. Do you think it would be appropriate for me to encourage her and be like, hey, or maybe like have a conversation, be like, hey, like, don't you think you should go use the restroom? Or is that overstepping a boundary for me, do you think?
You know, I don't know. I've never had a guy be like, hey, you should probably go pee.
That's kind of weird to say, right?
I don't think so.
I think it could be, but it's also, I think that's part of conversation that I feel like needs to happen. I think there needs to be more open conversation about, you know, sexual health and understanding of, you know, I mean, I would feel, actually, no, I'd be like, no, I appreciate that. Like,
yeah. Why would that be overstepping like, boundaries?
I don't know. Cause I guess it would just be me working under the assumption that I know more about their body than they do, which obviously isn't the case.
No, but you're just trying to help.
Yeah.
I mean,
heart's in the right place. I suppose. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Yeah, I guess you're absolutely right. So I guess on that note, sort of sort of on that note, we have an email from Kylie who says, is it valid to break up or stop pursuing someone just because they have STDs? Because she thinks that we have seemed to demonize STDs and sexual talk in our society. So do you think that, kind of expert opinion aside, just maybe more your personal opinion, do you think it's valid to break up or stop pursuing someone just because they have STDs?
Man, that's a super personal thing. Again, that kind of doubles back to, the other woman who wrote in feeling like very isolated because she has herpes. Things like chlamydia and syphilis, trichomonas, gonorrhea, those are like the four main STDs that are STIs that are all treatable. Like you can take antibiotics for them, and you don't have them anymore.
Right.
But things like HIV, HSV, hepatitis, you know, things like that aren't treatable, but there are things like antiretrovirals that you can go on that kind of subdue the virus a little bit, that makes you not as prone to like transfer them. So
kind of like that, that Gardasil shot, right?
Yeah. So well, Gardasil is a vaccine. So that just, that works differently than the retrovirals or antivirals and stuff. But it all comes down to what you're comfortable with as far as safe sex practices. So
yeah, I agree.
It's a tough one. I mean, like if you really care about this person, you see like a future with this person, then like you both go to counseling, figure out like what's the best way, what's like safest, healthiest way to not contract a disease from each other.
Right.
Or, I mean, if that's not comfortable for you, and then you don't have to be with someone just because you might feel bad about leaving. Like, if you don't want to be with someone, don't be with them.
Yeah, of course. It's on an individual basis. I think this is kind of a gray area that's really difficult to answer. And it goes back to our first email by Anonymous, which is, when do you bring up the herpes talk? We were talking a little bit about it last week, because I think while you want to tell them early on, I'm not sure. I don't know if you would mention it on the first date. I don't know what the correct answer is. I agree that the most obvious correct answer is before anything intimate happens, you need to tell that person.
We get kind of as many negatives that can come from the Bachelor franchise. There are many positives as well. Dating within the franchise is easier because everyone's been tested before going on the show. So it's like, oh, okay, I know I don't have to worry about this being an issue. Not that you normally would worry about that in regular dating anyways, but you just can rest much easier knowing that it's essentially not an issue because everyone that's on the show at that point has been tested and cleared and is good to go.
I wonder if they've been cleared. I guess they've been cleared, yeah.
Who's they?
Anybody who's been on the show tested.
Well, you have to...
They have to be given medication to suppress it at least, right? I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Well, you get tested before going on the show.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I mean, if you continue to have like sexual partners before you go on the show, then
typically there's like a month or two
cleared.
Or...
You know, unless you're using like condoms and like things like spermicide or something like that to prevent pregnancies and prevent transfer of STDs.
Well, we had an email from Dean. Dean, is this you or is this a listener named Dean?
Oh, that's cool. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Then we have a listener named Dean, which is fantastic.
What's up, my fellow Dean?
Dean, thank you for the email.
I'm pumped.
But it asks, do condoms stop all forms of herpes? And I would ask as well, do condoms stop all forms of STIs? Danielle?
Condoms aren't 100% effective, but they are the most effective barrier that we have right now to prevent STIs.
What about like doubling up
on a condom?
Yeah. What if I wear two condoms?
No, I mean, I don't think you need to double up on condoms. I mean, you would have to, unless you're talking about using, you know what? I don't know if you could use a female condom and a male condom. I don't know if that's like
What if the female wears two and I wear two as a man just to be so supremely safe? No, I've actually...
Can you even get two condoms on? Is that like, I feel like they would get stuck.
I got a lot of wiggle room down there, Danielle. You'd be surprised about what I can fit.
One regular size and then one magnum. You put it right over the top.
I will say, I've never personally done that, but I've heard some horror stories of doubling up can actually add to a lot more friction between the latexes, man. And it's not good.
No, I would imagine.
Yeah, Easton, that, I mean, that doesn't sound comfortable.
Easton is nodding his head in agreement.
Extra lube. But I will say a lot of extra lube helps with condoms to prevent tearing.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, get lube and condoms.
Easton was going to say something profound, but he decided to bow out. Abby has a question. How many times, and again, I know it's kind of weird because we kind of go from like expert medical opinion to like your own personal opinion, but Abby wants to know how many times a month or year should she be getting tested, in your opinion?
Okay, in my opinion, I would get tested with each new partner.
With each new partner. Oh, yeah. I think that's very fair.
So, Dean, how many times a year would you say you should be getting tested?
Wow, that's a very personal question. I will say I get tested on average twice a year.
Yeah, I think that's a good number.
Yeah.
You said what?
I said before every show.
Before? Okay, rude. Actually, no, I don't think I had to get tested before Paradise last 2 years ago because I was so fresh on those.
They don't test if it's within like the same year.
No, I got tested twice.
Really?
I got tested for The Bachelorette, and then I got tested for Paradise.
Maybe they thought you were being sexually active. I definitely didn't get tested. I don't even think I got tested for Winter Games. No, maybe I did because I got vaccinations for India as well at the same time. We have another anonymous emailer. She says, hi. Hello.
Hi.
I'm a virgin, but I messed around. Can you get an STD for messing around? And I think this goes back to what we talked about earlier. The answer is yes, surely.
Yeah. Because you can get STIs through oral sex.
Right. Sorry. I guess I should have read that one fully before asking it.
No, but it makes sense. Is there other, like, there's kissing, obviously.
So I guess kind of on that topic as well, April wants to know, is the only way you can get an STI from sexual contact, or can you get it from other things? She said she's heard a rumor about toilet seats and wants to know if that's true.
Okay, listen. If you're worried about getting an STI on a toilet seat, like, someone would have had to, like, just have on that toilet seat, not wiped it up, and you would have to like grind your vagina on a toilet seat to get herpes or any sort of STD.
I mean, is anybody else imagining that scenario right now in their head? Am I the only one?
Isn't it true that that sperm, once it's ejaculated from the penis, it basically loses all of its like reproductive value and its disease carrying ability, like almost within like 5 seconds? Or am I making that up?
I don't think it's 5 seconds, but it definitely has a short lifespan outside of the body.
Do you know the origins of sexually transmitted infections and diseases? Like, how do these become things? Obviously, like years and years, like millions of years ago, but how does it happen? Was it? I remember hearing something like someone a billion years ago had sex with an animal or something, and that's how it started.
That's what I've heard as well. A monkey.
You know what? I honestly don't know for sure, but like syphilis has been around forever.
Syphilis has. Oh, I actually that reminds me. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of all over the place at the moment. You said earlier that hepatitis is a sexually transmitted disease that's possible to transmit sexually. Is that true, or did I mishear?
Yeah, Hep B is, and that's another reason why they do the vaccine so early is. Kids too, because it's helped prevent like some like 4 or 6 million deaths throughout the throughout the world by vaccinating kids and stuff early against things like Hep B.
So most American children have been vaccinated for hepatitis B, though.
Correct. Yes.
And once you're vaccinated, are you basically immune to the disease, or is it just you're much less likely to get it?
No, you won't. You won't get. A disease once you've been, well, you shouldn't get a disease once you've been vaccinated against it. But I mean, there always are some like slight irregularities in each vaccine and each body's ability to fight it off. I mean, like perfect example is the flu vaccine. You know, they try and get as many sort of ranges of the virus into each one, but they can't account for every single strain of virus.
I don't know what's funny
out there.
I don't think my parents were ever anti-vaxxers, but I do know that when I was trying to enter fifth grade from elementary to middle school, I wasn't allowed to enter into my middle school because I had missed like 7 of my vaccinations that I was supposed to get as a toddler. And I think in part it was due to our, like, we lived in an RV all around the country for a long, long time. And so maybe we just didn't have the means to do it. But I wasn't allowed to enter fifth grade until I got 6 vaccinations. So I had to go to this like, I guess, hospital, and had to get 6 of these vaccinations, and they were the biggest freaking needles, and they hurt so bad. And I wasn't technically a legal student of the Colorado school system until I got those vaccinations. I don't know where I'm going with this, but it was just one of those things where I was like, you don't realize how many things, especially in today's world, like the smallpox vaccinations, all these things that used to be such big epidemics, but now we're like obviously slowly eliminating, even though we're creating new diseases and types of cancers and stuff like that, which is horrible.
Yeah. And then you have things like measles look back. And I'm like,
yeah, what the heck?
I cringe. It's because of the whole anti-vaxxer movement. I'm sorry, you guys are going to probably get like some hate on that.
That's fine. But we can be pro anti-vax. Or I'm sorry, we could be
pro-vaccination.
Pro-vax. But I'm
Thank
saying
you.
pro-anti-anti-vaxxers, I guess, is the point.
Oh my God. People sit there and they're just like, well, there's formaldehyde in these vaccines, and they're putting formaldehyde in you. I'm like, your body naturally produces formaldehyde.
There's a big argument too that vaccinations lead to higher rates of autism, right?
Nope, it's been debunked. Man that put out that study, he might even be in jail right now.
Really?
Wow.
He put it out for a specific purpose. Like it there is no scientific fact like proving that at all.
And I'm sure this hits really, really close to home for you as well, being a neonatal nurse. You see it all the time. Well, hopefully you don't see the anti-vaxxing all the time, but you work very closely with children who are obviously going through a lot of issues and dealing with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. And then I see a lot of babies that can't get certain vaccines yet because of their age who come in very sick and have passed away because they've been exposed to someone who decided not to vaccinate their kids.
Right.
Wasn't there, why am I blanking? There was news recently over the past few months or so about a particular vaccination that wasn't getting done, and there were a few fatalities, and there was this whole controversy about people not getting vaccinated. I can't remember exactly what it was from, and obviously nobody else can because nobody's speaking up about it.
So
forget I said anything.
Are vaccinated children at risk around non-vaccinated children?
No, non-vaccinated children are at risk. Hold on.
But let's say I have some children and I vaccinate all of them, and they're hanging around children who have not been vaccinated. Are my children at risk hanging around those non-vaccinated children, or is it just the ones that
don't? It depends on how old they are, because different vaccines are done at different ages.
Yeah.
I think it's like different, like 3, 6, 9 months. There's like a whole different range of vaccines that you can get that are okay at that age. So if your child is not old enough to be vaccinated against something yet, and they're around someone who hasn't been vaccinated or has been or like has been exposed to disease, like they're at risk of getting that.
Gotcha. So word of advice for our listeners out there, if you're having children, vaccinate your children, right?
Just educate yourself on them. Like, read everything on them. Me, obviously, yes, I want you to vaccinate your kids. I'd rather, I mean, like, the risk outweighs, the benefit outweighs the risk.
Mm. Well, what's the risk?
There's very few cases where, like, some bodies have rejected the vaccine, or they've gotten very gone into like a autoimmune response, but those types of things do scare a lot of people from vaccinating their kids, but it's like a 1 in a million chance, and don't quote me on that statistic it's very, very rare.
Well, and the chance of that is much smaller than the chance of them getting another disease that they would have been vaccinated from had they gotten the vaccinations, right? That's what you're saying. It's like the risk, the benefits outweigh the risk in that sense, because you're protecting them from so many other things.
You have a higher risk of contracting one of these diseases than actually like dying or being dying from getting the vaccine itself.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
How well are you knowledgeable in vaccinations, Danielle? Because I want to ask, a lot of people get nervous when talking about vaccinating their kids or even themselves because they're nervous about putting whatever disease that they're supposed to be vaccinated against into their body. Is that true that each vaccination has a small amount? Like if you're getting vaccinated for, I don't know, the flu, they actually give a little part of the flu to you?
Yeah, it's like a deactivated virus or it's like a weakened version of the virus. So your body builds these like antibodies and stuff to it, and which helps them to like fight it off.
Danielle, thank you so much for joining us. It was really nice meeting you over the podcast. Danielle, I really hope to meet you in person one day.
We love you. And for our listeners, don't forget to check out Danielle's new podcast called The WOMED. Yeah, girl. Premiering June 3rd.
Instagram, Twitter,
June 3rd. I can only imagine you want me as a guest on that podcast. Jared and me both talk all about urinary tracts.
More Dean.
Congratulations again.
I don't know, maybe, but.
Congratulations again. That's awesome. And obviously in your day-to-day as a neonatal nurse over in Nashville, you're killing it. And we are better people just being your friends. And we appreciate you taking the time to answer some of our questions.
I love you big time.
Love you big time. And I can't wait to see your face and talk to you again soon. Thanks again for taking the time, Dan.
No problem. Happy to do it anytime.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Well, we are all just a tiny bit smarter after that conversation. That's when you know you're talking to good people, when you can leave a conversation and be a little bit smarter. Okay, well, that'll do it for this week's episode of Help, I Suck at Dating. Hopefully, you guys are a little bit smarter because Jared and I both are.
I think we all are, right? That was very informative from Danielle.
The nice thing about relationships is just that you don't have to worry about this stuff.
Yes, that is nice. It's no longer on the table. Have you ever had like a scare?
I've had chlamydia before. I told you that.
Oh, that's right.
In the past.
Yeah.
Had chlamydia. Don't have it anymore. That's good. But let's go. Chlamydia free. But it's not something that I think people typically lose sleep over. Like, you're not going to be like shaking in your bed, I wonder if I'm ever going to contract an STD. But it's just the peace of mind of, I'm the only single person in this room. None of you guys have had to worry about STIs in years. Right?
Well, I disagree. I feel like a lot of people who had sex with a new partner immediately afterwards think, oh, shit,
Immediately after the fact. I'm thinking something just more generally like, oh, what if I meet someone in 3 days and I want to sleep with them and they have an STD? Like, it's just not something that
I know
typically. But. I'm envious of you guys for not having to worry about that.
I've never been tested my whole life.
I was about to ask you, do you still get tested? No,
I've never been.
Why
tested.
Would you?
I had never even once have been tested ever.
Really?
Really?
Can I ask you a very personal question?
Mike? Yeah.
Is your wife the only woman that you've slept with?
No, that's not. You can ask me that, and no, that is not the case.
Okay.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Have you ever had unprotected sex? I don't know if you want to answer that.
But this is a long time ago. So it wasn't something that we talked about very much. So it just didn't come up. I mean, truthfully, I probably should have been at some point.
Okay.
But I never was. And I never had any symptoms.
But now,
I never caught anything.
What's the point now?
And now it's been 22 years. So I'm pretty much home free.
Yeah.
STDs can lie dormant for 23 years.
Is that right? Damn it.
I guess it's interesting because the mark we know now would have gotten tested immediately. But that's not the mark
responsible,
of 30 years ago or whenever.
Yeah, right.
Not that. Date you.
Phil Fitz, it's happening. What could I do?
Easton, as a married man, have you been tested at all?
Yeah, we did that on our wedding night.
Yeah.
No, we did get
heavy.
When we got engaged, we both got tested.
You did?
Yeah. Because it had been a couple of years for me. I'd been a man about town, you know. I had sex with one other woman, I think, in that time.
When you got engaged, you guys were dating before
when
that.
When we got engaged, we were like, because we were like, now we're going to be married. We should probably.
But you were sexually active before you were engaged.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very.
My guy.
Yeah.
69 and every night.
But I hadn't been tested in a couple of years. And I don't think she had either. So we just wanted to make sure. And it felt great to have that peace of mind.
But it's like you knew. It was just,
I knew,
you just wanted like a medical confirmation.
you know, sometimes you hear those stories of like, oh yeah, I was at a urinal, then I nicked it, and then you know, and I got an STD from
you were
the,
talking
you know?
About the toilet seat. Yeah, thing. Maybe someone was rubbing. Yeah,
I went. Yeah, I went
grinding their vagina on that toilet seat.
I went in a public pool. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make sure, and it was fine. I always had protected sex when I was a single man.
Good for you.
Wow, very good for you.
Yeah.
Never slept up once, huh?
I wouldn't say that, but.
And Jared, as an engaged man, you have no need to get tested.
Not anymore. I got tested. I got tested before Ashley, though, just to like make sure.
Oh, sure.
Before we started going down that road.
Now, what happens if like some just randomly like at a physical, one of you guys gets tested and you pop for like gonorrhea or something? Like what happens?
Really, really uncomfortable.
There's a lot of questions that come.
A lot of questions.
Well, if you've ever watched Seinfeld, you know you can get gonorrhea from a tractor.
The tractor story. That's what I'm saying. You never know.
I know. It is as you get older and you become more aware of these things. Like Easton, you even said like a public pool. It's like, yeah, I guess that's possible.
I remember,
and as a paranoid human being, there's always that doubt in my head.
Back in like 2008, there was this big epidemic in Aspen because there's a lot of horses out there, and there was horse herpes that was being spread, but it wasn't being spread via sex. It was an airborne herpes that only horses could contract. Could you imagine if herpes was an airborne disease for humans?
Wow.
That'd be terrified if it evolves to that one day.
It honestly could.
It could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Help, I Suck at Dating. Hopefully we can all suck at dating, but not suck at getting tested, practicing safe sex, and
yes,
just being communicative with our sexual partners. Thank you so much for listening. Big thank you to Danielle Maltby for being our expert medical advice giver. Be sure to check out her podcast, The WOMED, coming out June 3rd. Be sure to tune into next week's podcast. We're recording from Wango Tango this week. This next week.
Wango Tango. From STDs to Wango Tango.
I think that we're going to suck a little bit less, so just be sure to tune in then.
Follow Help by Suck at Dating with Dean, Vanessa, and Jared on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.